Developmental optometrist, award-winning author, and international speaker, Dr. Lynn Hellerstein holds powerful and inspiring conversations with her guests on Vision Beyond Sight in areas of healthcare, wellness, education, sports, and psychology. They share their inspirational stories of healing and life transformation through their vision expansion. Billions of people have vision problems, and vision is more than 20/20. Vision Beyond Sight will help you see with clarity and gain courage and confidence. Your vision does not define you. You define your vision. With Dr. Lynn's new way to look at your life through a new lens, you will be ready to meet yourself and receive visualizations for miracles to come. Welcome to Vision Beyond Sight.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Lynn, and welcome to Vision Beyond Sight. Today, visiting with us is a very special person whom I'd actually wanted to meet since 2009. I had written my first book, See It, Say It, Do It, and then found this person online that had written a very powerful book about visualization and imagination. And this person was Dr. Charlotte Resnick. So today we have the great honor to have a conversation with her. And we're going to talk about Beyond Mindfulness, the power of your child's imagination. But before we get the conversation started, I'd like to share some of Dr. Charlotte's very impressive bio. Charlotte Resnick, PhD, has dedicated her life to helping children, adolescents, parents, and professionals. She is a foremost authority on how to engage with and develop mindfulness, meditation, and imagination in children and teens. Dr. Charlotte is the author of the Los Angeles Times best-selling book, The Power of Your Child's Imagination, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success. And she's also written chapters in other books and many articles as well. She's currently working on a new activity book, which I'm excited to see, and it's for kids based on her 9 tools. Dr. Charlotte is a child educational psychologist and received her PhD from USC. She is known as a pioneer in therapeutic interventions with children. Dr. Charlotte has a 30-year-plus meditation practice and is the creator of Imagery for Kids, Breakthrough for Learning, Creativity, and Empowerment. This is a mindful, positive coping skills program. And in addition to her private practice in LA, she has created many CDs, MP3s, and blogs for Psychology Today, Huffington Post, and you'll see her on many summits, media consultant, and she teaches workshops internationally. So Dr. Charlotte, it is truly my honor to finally meet you. Welcome to Vision Beyond Sight.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Lynn. I'm so delighted we're getting together today. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yes, thank you. So I'd like to start with a quote from you that just resonates so much with me. The challenges of growing up in today's rapidly changing society are enormous. Children need to be equipped with skills for survival and growth that were never imagined. So, you know, what are some of the powerful inner resources kids need to manage, heal, and thrive?
I think that's so important because we don't necessarily think that kids have their own answers. And I really do believe that they have wisdom inside and they could find their own answers if we just help them a little. So kind of connecting with their imagination. And some people say, oh, I don't have a good imagination. I don't see things. Well, you don't have to see it. You could think it, you could imagine it, you could desire it, you could vision it. And then we start from there. So if my goal really is to help the kids be okay no matter what is going on around them, and I believe that they have their answers inside, that starts them off with like a powerful idea, like, oh, I have some answers, because a lot of kids don't feel they know anything. or they pretend they know everything and they don't. That might be the teenager. Dr. Lynn, I've been around for a while now, and my meditation practice and my working with kids kind of started at the same time. And all those years ago, I was working in the inner city, and the kids were really desperate. You know, they were really in bad shape all around, and I felt I needed to help them connect with that wisdom. So over time, I just kind of learned from the kids and developed different what I call 9 tools. But they're all geared toward helping kids tap into practical information for themselves. I mean, sometimes they come up with something brilliant, but like one girl I was just thinking of, she was really scared to go to sleep at night, and she was about 11. And we worked together, and she kind of connected with some inner guides, like animal friends. And pretty soon, and having conversation with them and receiving information, and pretty soon she was feeling good. In fact, she imagined a giant dragon around her bed protecting her from any bad stuff, and a tiger by her door. And she, just like a month or so later, she was mentioning to a friend that, you know, she's sleeping through the night now, and, you know, she's using her imagination, and her friend said, that's stupid, you know, like, how could that help? So she said, my fears come from my imagination, so I had to go into that realm to help myself.
How insightful.
Insightful, profound, simple, but profound. And that's what I try to go for with the kids, is to basically help them have like an aha moment, a connection, like all of a sudden the light goes on. Like, I could do this no matter what. And I've worked, you know, initially I was working with in the inner city, and later on, I started working, say, in private practice. And so I've worked at all kinds of socioeconomic levels and diverse populations. And we all have one thing in common. We have a heart that feels, that is touched by things in a positive or negative way. And so I try to look at the commonality to connect with many different types of kids.
Isn't that beautiful? Let me ask you, why do you think, because I have the belief that we are all born with wisdom and an mm-hmm. imagination, but I really believe in society, we're very good at suppressing it, suppressing our kids or finding, just like you said, when your friend said that was silly, or, you know, about mm-hmm. her dragon, that can totally shoot a person down and throw them in a doubting themselves phase again. Comment on that if you would.
Well, one of the things we want to do, I would like to help kids and their families or their teachers, is to build a stronger child inside so they have belief in themselves. We're all human. We all make mistakes. We don't know everything, but we want to respect kids like we want people to respect adults and each other. So it's very good to listen to kids. And then with the attitude of, we'll figure this out, you know, you have really good ideas, and, you know, we'll figure that together, and we could brainstorm and think of things to do in a particular situation. For mm-hmm. me, the foundation is really the way to connect inside is to learn basic meditation. Now, when I started out in the school system, we couldn't use the word meditation.
Right.
And it was like, I don't know, it was like a bad thing or something. And then many years later, really mindfulness got popular. And I want to thank Jon Kabat-Zinn, because he started teaching mindfulness in hospital in Massachusetts to help people that were going through heart disease. And then it kind of filtered down. And I kind of wanted to title our connection today Beyond Mindfulness, because he worked so long before the word mindfulness caught on. And now it's like, wow, everybody knows it. And I think the world, the Americans especially, have embraced mindfulness so much because the word mind is in it. And the word meditation is not. But mindfulness is a form of meditation. So it's like, okay, we got a way in. Like when I started out, I might call the work relaxation, you know, guided imagery. Now, sometimes guided imagery wasn't important. But when we look at mindfulness for children and some lovely books on it, they're basically guided meditations. That's how we're teaching kids that. So go ahead. Go on.
Well, you know, it reminded me of a story you talked about how meditation wasn't accepted because I started, you know, 40 years ago and working with kids. And I remember I had a little 7-year-old who was really struggling in spelling, and we use a whole visualization process for spelling. And this little guy did great. And the process is to imagine, see the words, we write them out, see them in your head and draw them and making colors. And there's certain things that just really make that picture alive and well. Worked really great for the kiddo. So the parent came back and she, you know, we give them home therapy, and she said, what do we do? And I said, well, we're going to do visualization for spelling. Mm-hmm. And the look on her face was, you know, it could almost like a knife went through you. And she said, well, I'm pulling my son out of therapy, vision therapy. And I said, well, why? She said, you are not doing mind control with my son.
Right.
And I said, oh, I'm really sorry. Would it be okay if I just had to make pictures in his mind then? She said, oh, yeah, that's fine. So the words carried such weight at that time. And yeah, mindfulness is kind of the buzzword right now that I see really working.
Yes. And when I was starting, say, in a long time ago in the 1980s, I met a wonderful pediatrician, Daniel Cohn, who wrote a book with Karen Olness on hypnosis for children. And it was protocols for professionals to use in different areas, whether it's asthma, whether it's headaches or stomach aches, all kinds of specific areas. And they're really guided meditation. So over the decades, so hypnosis and guided imagery and then mindfulness and meditation is more acceptable. But I always, like you, have a vocabulary that depending on who I'm talking to, I could use the appropriate words for their belief system. It's basically calming yourself down and getting in touch with the information you have inside that you might not normally be aware of because our head is thinking a lot or we're distracted. And this, the idea of even my first foundation tool, the balloon breath, is a basic meditation breath. So it's basically breathing to a few inches below your belly button. Kids put their hands under their belly button and imagining there's a balloon there. So when you breathe in, the balloon gets larger, and when you breathe out, it flattens. And I'll often do that first 3 times with eyes open and then 3 times with eyes closed, just so they get, you know, I don't want to ask them to close their eyes first because sometimes people are afraid of closing their eyes. And then they could feel the difference, and they notice that with their eyes closed, they're more relaxed. And so I will use that word. I was working with a teenager once, and I said, hey, have you ever done yoga or meditation? And she said, oh, no, my mother does that. And I said, oh, okay, great. We're just going to do some deep breathing, kind of like what you did with that mother. It's like, I'll name it something else. That's fine with me.
Right. It's funny, the power of the word, any words that we say in general.
And it's what the zeitgeist is, you know, what is acceptable in the moment. And that's why I refer back to hypnosis and guided imagery, the meditation, you know, mindfulness. It's all on that scale. And so it's easier for kids often at the beginning when they're learning to meditate to have a guided meditation. But at the same time, I might guide them through something, a longer meditation or like the ones that we have for downloads. I teach them just to breathe and to meditate. So that balloon breath turns from 3 to say 10, which is about a minute. You know, I will take out my little watch and then see how few breaths the child could take. And then so, okay, can you find a minute? Because kids are very busy. And so often when we might ask them to do something separate from the homework they're forced to do, you know, it's like, I don't have time for that. Well, can we find a minute? I'll also ask them, and this is usually using that visualization, how are things now? Like maybe they're having trouble sleeping, or they're having a lot of headaches, or they're not getting along at home. How would they like things to be? So I'm not putting any pressure on them. I'm just setting up, you know, kind of an atmosphere to give them the, oh, it's okay. You could think, how would you like it to be? Okay.
Right.
So then I'll ask, well, are you willing to learn some new tools to help yourself? You know, either do better in school or have less homework or whatever. Whatever their goal is, this work, because it's inner work, can be adapted. And I feel very passionate about it. And over the years, more and more so. And so then they say yes. And then great. Then we're good. Then we're in the right place. So then I get their buy-in, which is important for any age child, not just a teenager, any age child.
Yeah, that's what I really noticed was the importance of the buy-in and the enrollment in for themselves. Not that you have to, and this is not your homework, but you do that very early. You know, I was going to ask you, when you talked about this mindfulness guided meditations, what's the youngest child you've worked with? What age?
3.5. I would say she's a very verbal girl. I usually don't like to see three-year-olds. I see their parents instead only. But as long as she's not going to, like, take a nap in the middle of a session, I'm good. And I'm doing this. I'm doing all the integrating of imagination while we're playing. And, of course, three-year-olds or four-year-olds are playing with their imagination all the time. So we could integrate it. And even, you know, older kids, because I'll work through kids going to college, and sometimes they come back after college. And so I feel I've seen over time that it doesn't matter how old you are, where you come from, what your language is. It's just a way to integrate different inner tools. So what I was saying is the breath is the foundation, along with being able to imagine a special place where you could be safe. So it's kind of like give them permission if they're having problems with their parents or siblings or friends. Once they walk through a door to their special place, everyone loves and accepts them just the way they are. Now, sometimes, and it could be any place. It could be a combination, like some kids do combination of inside, outside, or just inside, or in their bed, or it doesn't matter if it's Disneyland or whatever they think of. They feel they could be happy there. That's good. That's good enough for me. Mm-hmm. So because that's where they do their inner work. It's kind of like a little respite from everyday life, which we all need desperately all the time. And I'm kind of joking, but
not really.
Right. And so that is a wonderful basis. A couple of kids who have been pretty traumatized in their early life have a hard time imagining a place that they're safe. So I might have them work with a little speck of light inside and have them expand that, filling up their whole body with love and calmness and acceptance, and then spreading it out past their physical body. And then maybe like a cocoon or being inside an egg of safety and protection, and then maybe sealing it with their favorite color, and then knowing that anything bad will bounce back and anything good could come through. Again, giving them another tool to be in a difficult situation that they can still be safe.
Yeah, and the safety is what I hear you're talking about being so important, that this is their place where they're safe, where they created. Is that correct?
Yes, because a lot of kids are scared their parents are going to get mad at them, which is normal. Every parent gets mad sometimes, but, you know, or their friends, and they're holding themselves back from being totally who they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, Dr. Lynn.
Well, you know,
speak for 12 hours.
Yeah, really. Well, I believe you have just started two of the 9 tools that you've talked about. You have a program using 9 imagination tools. Are these the first two, the breath and then the imagine special place? All right, continue on, please.
So that's like the foundation. And then it's like, okay, how do you access your wisdom? Well, for all of us, sometimes it's hard to know what to do. Like, what should you do when your friend says something mean? I don't know. But if you have some assistance that comes from inside you. So what I do with kids is I'll have them meet like a special animal friend who's protective and loves them and cares about them. Or sometimes when the animal friend is on vacation or not helping, we find like a wizard or a superhero or the older, wiser self that they are, or the person that has been through this before. And that animal or wise person or wizard comes to offer them advice. And I guess animal friends are a little bit more protective. Like sometimes when you're scared, they might get like a big lion that comes to protect them. Sort of like the girl with sleeping, she had a dragon and she had a tiger. Or they'll have a little scared rabbit or deer, like deer in the headlights, who understands their fears. It's kind of like a metaphor to help them. Everything we look at is, I kind of see as symbolic in some way. I don't have to make up the symbols. I don't have to tell them or ask them, but sometimes they know it and sometimes they don't. And it's okay. It works either way. And then these animal friends or wise people or wizards offer them gifts. And the gift could be something they say or something they do or something they show them. Like one girl was very, very shy, was afraid of speaking up. And so her wizard gave her a crystal wizard, she called her. And she gave her different crystals. One was a star to make her feel really good. One was like a ruby for how to remember that she's loved, you know, with the red color. And one was to do anything else she needed. So it gave her the confidence of doing something. And you mentioned using visualization for spelling. So I have a spelling wizard that comes to several children. Or a math wizard. Someone's math wizard was Albert Einstein once. I thought that was pretty cool.
Can you rent him out?
Yeah, rent him out. Right. Everyone could have one. And the spelling wizard, it's different for everybody because we're using the unique imagination of each child, which I love because it could be very, very different. That's why the book, The Power of Your Child's Imagination, contains like 20 years of stories. It was so wonderful to be able to connect them.
Yeah, this is great.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to have you hold that. We're going to need to take a break, and we need to get back to your 9 tools with so many of your stories. And these tools, I find the more creative, the funnier, or the more sensory they are, the more powerful they are for kids. And our job is not to judge them, but to accept them with their name and silliness or whatever they are, because they become so, so important for these kids. So hold your great thoughts, and for the audience, start your imagination using these tools. Breathe, go to your place, and we're going to be right back in just a couple minutes and continue with Dr. Charlotte's wonderful imagination tools.
Dr. Lynn will be right back after this. Can your child see, really see, more than 20/20? Does your child struggle in school, have trouble with tracking when reading, or resist writing? Dr. Lynn Hellerstein's award-winning book, See It, Say It, Do It, provides parents and teachers with specific tools and strategies in visualization and processing. Improve and empower your child's learning and performance in school, sports, and play. Get See It, Say It, Do It on Amazon or visit lynnhellerstein.com. developmental optometrist, award-winning author, and international speaker, Dr. Lynn Hellerstein holds powerful and inspiring conversations with her guests on Vision Beyond Sight in areas of healthcare, wellness, education, sports, and psychology. They share their inspirational stories of healing and life transformation through their vision expansion. Vision Beyond Sight will help you find clarity in your functional vision and expand the power of your seeing brain to gain courage, confidence, and success in your life. Join Dr. Lynn each week for a new, exciting episode, Vision Beyond Sight. Dr. Lynn Hellerstein's book, 50 Tips to Improve Your Sports Performance, has identified the top 50 ways for you to achieve excellent results in any sport activity. Enhance eye-mind-body coordination skills, achieve the mental edge, prevent injuries. This book belongs in every athlete's or coach's sports bag. Get 50 Tips to Improve Your Sports Performance on Amazon or visit LynnHellerstein.com. Welcome back to Vision Beyond Sight. Here's Dr. Lynn.
Hi, friends. Welcome back. We're in the middle of a delightful conversation with Dr. Charlotte Resnick, who is a psychologist and works with kids and teens and adults on especially the power of their imagination. And so she started sharing her 9 tools, her imagination tools, and we were about number 5. So if you don't mind, review the first 5 and then let's go on to 6.
Absolutely. So the foundation tools are what I call the balloon breath. It's an easy visual, especially for younger kids. You're breathing below your navel, and when you breathe, the navel gets bigger, you know, it goes out like a balloon, and that helps you relax and go into your own inner wisdom. Along with that, foundation is a special place where you could feel safe and do your inner work or have a little mini vacation. And starting to connect with your wisdom, you might connect with a special animal friend that's protective and loving, or some more magical creature like a superhero or a wizard, or even the older, wiser self. And each of those special animals or people, they offer you gifts to help you solve everyday problems. And then, you know, that's a great start. And you could do this pretty quickly with kids. Like one girl came in very depressed, and she had, you know, over the summer, she had forgotten all her math and spelling. And so when I asked her to take a look at what her brain looked like, she drew a picture with all the black spots. And then she was able to clean out her brain and shiny up all the spots with the help of some animal friends and cleanser in her imagination. And then everything was ready to learn for the new school year. So you could do that at any point. And what's really, really, really important to me is for kids to connect to the wisdom of their heart and belly. And what we know from research is that it kind of sounds a little beyond, but people that receive heart transplants, they often, not all the time, but enough so people take note of it, start to like either an activity or a food that the person who donated their heart to them did. So scientists feel that there's some cellular transfer, and it's like we have another brain in our heart. We also seem to have another brain in our belly where their cells are similar to T cells in the brain. And so I feel let's work with all these parts. Let's work with the brain in our gut, in our heart, and in our mind. And that will give us a lot more information. So my next tool would be connecting to the wisdom of your heart and belly. And what's really easy to do for kids is just put their hand over their heart center, say around heart level in the center of their chest, and ask, what does your heart want you to know? What would be helpful for you? And I usually have a ritual with kids to do this at the end of our sessions or any time that it's necessary, but to, okay, what does your heart want you to know for the next, you know, to help you over the next week? And one, or and I even, they might even think of an angel or pick an angel card. And it might be something like a summary of what we've already been talked about, been talking about, kind of like one boy said the other day, have a good week and be flexible. So him telling himself that is so much more powerful than if I did or his parents did. It's coming from within him. And even if you say, oh, but, you know, I already told my kid that, that's why he's repeating it. That means he's integrated your good advice, your wisdom into himself, if he's coming up with it on his own. So that's so helpful. And then, you know, trust your gut. I grew up in New York City, even though I live in L.A. now, and we learned to trust our gut on the mean streets of, you know, New York. Like if one street didn't seem very feel very good, don't go down it. Don't like wait to see. And trust your gut. I mean, that's just a phrase we use all the time. And listen to your heart. And those are two wonderful, wonderful tools. I mean, I would say it's really hard to say which are the most important to me, but I really like those. And
you know, if I could stop you for just a second, yes, it's please. My gut that got me into this work.
Okay.
20 years ago, I ended up having a medical crisis and a tumor in my colon, all of this. And my healing and recovery was working with a psychologist that did a lot of meditation, mindfulness work. Mm-hmm. And my big message was, I never listened to my gut. And there was so much wisdom there. And that's what really propelled me into working in the area of visualization that I have. So I loved it, that it's one of your special tools, because it's really the tool that I've learned that I need to listen to and look at.
And kids second guess themselves all the time. They don't trust themselves. So we're trying to develop their intuition and to trust that their own wisdom when they're calm, not when they're angry, because we can't think straight. We can't connect very well when we're angry. You know, we need to calm our that part of the brain, the amygdala, that gets all upset and excited. And we need to calm that part down. The best way is through the breathing and through, you know, internal calmness. And then you could trust the information you get. So, you know, even though...
You know, I was just going to comment real quick before you continue on, that I have found that you don't have to do all of these 9 tools with a kid at once.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. It's just, you know, either I teach them in the order or in the order they need them for the moment.
Yes.
So, yes. And the idea is it's a mix and match approach. You know, I have one boy that was speaking in front of classmates and he was very anxious. And all he did was remember to breathe and do his balloon breath. And that helped him be able to speak, even though he was scared.
Yeah. And thank you for clarifying that, because I've had kids that, you know, are so nervous about getting up in the class and reading. And when we take a breath and start exploring, their imagery is all these really big, gigantic monsters looking at them, you know, and laughing at them.
Right.
Just, you know, have him breathe and play with those pictures. And he puts on clothes and enlarges. Bam, the whole, you know, state of mind changes. And you can see he sits up straighter. And that's his assignment, is to, you know, check that picture before he goes up there. And he sees himself big and all these other kids in the classroom really small, not laughing anymore because he's captured their attention.
Yes. And you mentioned, you know, earlier when we were just speaking about sometimes teenagers, you know, think this is silly or stupid. So I just try to adapt it to them and let them know that, you know, especially if they're into sports or any kind of performance, that there are sports psychologists in college games, and all the professionals, the Olympic athletes, have psychologists that work with them in visualization. And to imagine the game going really well, like Michael Phelps used to, the great swimmer with all those medals, he used to imagine things that could go wrong while he was swimming and then fixing them. And he'd imagine that over and over. Or an Olympic athlete at the top of the hill and skiing, when you see them waving, they're also visualizing the run going really well, and they know how to correct everything, and they've done it in their mind so much that in real time, it's much easier.
Those are great examples. Well, let's continue on your nine imagination tools.
Almost down to the end. All right. So the heart and the belly are really important, but it seems we have feelings all over our body. And like, where do you keep your fear? If we're trying to work with something like fear or anger, like, where's your fear in your body? I'll have a child close their eyes. You know, one boy said that he had anger in his belly and it was red, red hot. And okay, so if I want to work with him, I want to work with some anecdotes. So I do two against one, two good things against one bad, you know, two feelings you feel really great about are the opposites. So what's the opposite of anger for you? Well, for him, it was love and calmness. Well, his calmness, where was that? Was blue in his shoulders, and his love was kind of white in his heart. So what we do is I just have him do his breathing, his balloon breath, and just focus on that and then start breathing in that blue calmness with his breath and his intention to where the anger is in his belly. And then from that point, breathe out that calmness throughout his whole body, filling his whole body up with calmness. And notice what's going on. We could say be mindful of what's going on. And then bring in that second feeling, the second powerful love, the white love, and breathe it through his body into where the anger is, and then fill up his whole body with love. And one, everyone feels better, mostly, and usually the negative feeling gets much less or disappears. Like one boy said, when he breathed in calmness, the anger, it kind of covered, you know, the anger. But when he breathed in love, it kind of dissipated it, and it all burst and went away.
Those are beautiful examples, and simple but so powerful.
That's right. That's what we're looking for, simple but powerful. So I'll often have the kids do a feelings portrait. And when they're young, maybe I'll have some butcher paper and trace their bodies on the paper. And when they're older, we'll just use like an 11 by 17 piece of paper and draw an outline of a body. And then instead of, you know, a self-portrait with features, we do a feelings portrait. And it's a great way for them to start getting in touch with where their feelings are and to learn about them without any expectation. So, you know, for younger ones, you use simpler feelings, mad, sad, glad, you know, love and scared and things like that. And then as they get older, you add more feelings like teenagers have, you know, bored, disgusting, or, and that movie Inside Out, it was such a great movie several years ago. I'm still waiting for them to do the sequel.
But I loved it.
It was so great having, you know, green, disgusting, having those characters. And after, you know, the kids just got into it. And a lot of kids have seen it now just, you know, at home on, you know, on streaming. So the whole idea that each feeling might have a place, and it doesn't matter if the place changes, like if today anger is red and tomorrow it's purple or love is pink or blue, or it doesn't matter. It's just them learning a slightly different language for their feelings and learning a very powerful technique that shows them they could have an effect on their feelings. And that happens not only to their feelings, Dr. Lynn, but also to symptoms like headaches or stomach aches or any kind of pain. So they can, with the, and over the years, there's a three-question headache remedy that's very cool. You just follow your breathing, and then you ask, what color is the headache, what shape is it, and how heavy is it? And then you have mood to breathing. It's like in rounds. And you do that two, three, four, five times, whatever. And what I notice that over time, the headache goes from red or black and sharp, you know, like a square and very heavy, to lighter and rounder. Like to blue and yellow and white, and the weight of it gets smaller and smaller. And then if there's anything left, you could ask, the child could ask the headache, what more do I need to understand or know to let go of the rest of the pain? Wow. And that process has, over and over, kids feel so much better.
I just, you know, when I first saw your work way back in, you know, 10, 12 years ago, that example is what just drew my attention, because I'm sure we both see so many kids that have been to the pediatrician with stomach aches and headaches and told right. there's nothing wrong and they can't find anything. And I kept thinking, gosh, if there was a Charlotte in every pediatric office.
I get a lot of referrals from pediatricians. And one day I was doing a group for adolescent boys, I think, you know, just a bunch of kids. And one had a stomach ache, one had a headache, one had a canker sore. So I was directed and I created this creating a guided meditation for them, which turned into a meditation CD and a download of creating a magical garden where they could, like a metaphor for growing healthy and tall, and they could grow, you know, flowers and whatever they need to. And then while the garden is growing, they're relaxing in a healing pond and maybe drinking the healing waters and or floating in it or being by its side. And after that meditation, the headache was gone, the stomach ache was gone, and the canker sore didn't hurt so much. And they went home, they had recorded my words, and they took it home. And one boy said his canker sore went away in half the time that it usually would. And so that meditation was used in a pilot study with a couple of children's hospitals for teenagers that had spinal surgery, like totally different, right? But the kids that listened had less pain and were more relaxed. So it's a very, very powerful technique. And that, I love that, that they could heal themselves on a physical, emotional, spiritual level while they're relaxing in their pond and their garden is growing, and then they talk to the flowers or the trees or whatever in the garden that gives them information on, you know, how to help themselves.
I love that. And you have, I want to make sure we mention, you have many of these meditations available on downloads, and if you have a CD player, CDs.
Whatever you like, because they're all available on downloads. And that's my website, Imagery for Kids.
And right.
I just have, like you, I have talks that I've done, like coming out of COVID and how to help kids, and just lots of different, tons of blog articles, lots of information you get just from there. You can spend a long time there, but lots of tools for you to use if you want as well.
And your information, we have the website and everything on our show notes so that people can be sure to check that out. But you mentioned COVID, Dr. Charlotte, and, you know, we all have our own perspectives of what happened to our kids during this time. I have it from a visual learning perspective. You have it from the emotional, psychological. I mean, what have you noticed, and where are we at now, do you think?
Well, what I noticed is it was really tough on a lot of kids. The kids that did best were either having like a sibling in the house that they, you know, the Zoom school was year and a half. I was doing just Zoom for my therapy with kids for a year and a half till the vaccine came out. And now I've been back since then, but we were wearing masks for a long time. Now I'm not with the kids. But sometimes if someone gets COVID in the family, we'll do a Zoom. But a lot of the kids, the teenagers really suffered from not being with their friends and became very, very depressed. And it was almost like when they were able to go back to school, most of them the following year in April, that made such a difference. But still, it's like the kids lost a part of their childhood and they lost the opportunity to socialize for a year and a half or two or, and, you know, because it was when the kids went back to school, they were also wearing masks, and it's still affecting them because COVID is still around. It's not, of course, is awful sounding, and, you know, many people are vaccinated and have a milder case, but it's still affecting them. So the kids I saw that did better, either they had a brother or a sister that they could be in the play with, or they were working with a pod, like they had another family that they went to school with, and went to school with, meaning on Zoom, or two other families. So they had a pod. So even when they were going back to school, these kids had people to hang out with. But I think we'll see. There'll be plenty of dissertation studies on this topic for the next generation. And over time, we will see. But it seems like all the kids lost academic achievement, you know, when they went back, they were like a year, 2 years behind, and emotionally too. It's a hard thing, but I'm very positive, and I always see what good could come out of it.
Which is really great. We just have a couple minutes left, Dr. Charlotte, and I did want to touch a little bit on sleep. We know that that's an issue for so many kids, for a lot of reasons. So, you know, how can parents help use the imagination to help their kids fall asleep easily and quickly?
Oh, I like that, easily and quickly. Everyone knows you're supposed to get off your screen a couple hours before. Nobody I know does that. even an hour before, nobody is doing that. But it, of course, we know that that would be better. So to develop some kind of routine to wind down during the day, like one teenage girl, she would give up her phone or put it down at 9:30, even though that's too late. But then she'd take a warm bath. And she'd have chamomile tea, and then she'd play either one of my meditations or some soft, you know, music of the beach or the ocean or rain, and just to keep, have a ritual of winding down over time. And the issue for a lot of parents and families is there's not a lot of time at night because they're after school, they're in some sport or in some activity, and then they come home, then they have to do their homework, and then they're winding up later than they'd like to. So I would suggest, okay, whatever time you have, create your own wind down ritual. And think about using the imagination, what would you like to dream about? And we know before bed is a time a lot of kids talk to their parents, which is helpful because it lets go of the stresses of the day. So you could just create an imagination idea, like how about all that stress, can we let it go in a cloud? Or what comes to you, rather than telling them, ask them, what comes to you to carry away the stresses of the day so you could start anew? And to give them positive suggestions, like during your sleep, you'll be, you know, your brain will be processing all the things that you no longer need, what would you like to dream about, what do you look forward to tomorrow? And so they're going to sleep without worries, but in a more positive state of the mind. And sometimes kids, just their mind keeps going. So we want to slow it down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Charlotte, I'm so sorry to say we're out of time. And especially in this last bit of you calming down, you have calmed me down. I am ready to relax. But I just want to thank you so very much for all you're doing for kids and for parents and teachers. And I thank you. I'm honored to have you on the show and hope that we connect again real soon. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Dr. Lynn. I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on Vision Beyond Sight. Join Dr. Lynn Hellerstein each week to help you find clarity in your functional vision and expand the power of your seeing brain to gain courage, confidence, and success in your life. Remember, your vision does not define you. You define your vision. For more information and find additional podcasts, visit lynnhellerstein.com. See you next time on Vision Beyond Sight.